Let's get fucking talking good.
We should probably put a link
on... Yeah, we can put a link. Yeah. To the What the Update!
What the Update! Hello! What the Update! We can't start it from there.
Why not? We can start it from where we like.
This is our podcast and no one's going to tell us what to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rage Against the Podcast.
Rage Against the Sewing Machine.
Anger and Frustration.
Anger and Frustration.
Okay. If you've never heard the song Northcott by Bedroom
Philosopher.
Northcote.
Northcote. Oh my God. We have a friend that lives in Northcote or nearby.
Yeah.
And he regularly travels on the 86 tram. And he says it's really funny.
And that's a good song to check out. But we were talking about a What the Update.
What the Update. Okay, I've got a What the Update for you. Oh, my friend Uber Butler. Now, people may remember, you gorgeous listeners out there who have been listening since the start of the year, or maybe even before then. Oh, we love you all. But I brought you the story of Uber Butler, who created a restaurant that solely existed on the internet only. It was a fake restaurant. I love this guy so much. There's footage of him scamming his way to Paris Fashion Week as a Giorgio... Oh, something shivers, I can't remember. It sounds like Armani, but it's not Giorgio Armani.
Yeah.
But on that, he scammed his way to Paris Fashion Week with a few pairs of these knockoff jeans and... that he found in Brixton Market.
Yeah.
And I love him. And, yeah, so he scammed his way in and got invited to all the after parties, was partying with the stars until 4 a.m. And then he actually went and found the real Giorgio person that created the jeans. And I really hope something's come out of this for Giorgio, because, you know, those jeans actually look nice and I'm actually quite tempted to go and buy some when I go to Brixton.
Well.
Very soon.
Ooh.
Well, not very soon, but yeah, you get soon-ish. The drift. I'm leaving in about 7 weeks to go to the motherland.
Indeed.
I can't wait. But yeah, I just wanted to bring you the What the Update because, yeah, Uber. Well done, mate.
We found it on Facebook. I'll put a link in the description below.
Which is what we were rabbiting on with before.
Yeah.
You're probably tuned in. That's
Just hit record and see what comes out.
God, that sounds charming.
It does. I think we should get started.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. What the... History. Hello and welcome to What the History, your fortnightly bits of bizarre history that will make you say, what the history?
Mm-hmm.
I am one of your hosts, Trevor Holland, and I am joined by the ever gorgeous...
Oh, thank you, Susie Holland. Thank you so much for that. That's beautiful.
It's true. Oh. I can't help it. Oh. I just tell the truth.
Oh, he's a good boy.
About truth. And we're about bizarre history things. Yep. So, Susie, what do you have for us?
Okay, now I have to apologize in advance, guys. This is going to be a bit of a long one, but it's important, okay? So, alrighty. Now, I'll start. One of the things I really love about doing What the History is not only do I get to spend more time with my awesome hubby, but I get to research and explore the most interesting and what the true stories from across our wonderful earth. I often present the stories I find in a comical way because, let's face it, most of them are, and sometimes I come across stories that are a bit more serious, but just as important as all stories are. One always springs to mind for me is the Hatpin Warriors. Now, I know that I go on a lot about this one, but it is important. So, and this story I will tell you now is a bit more on the serious side. Okay, now the slant I'm going with on this story is more a why the, as in why someone is listed on a source as one of history's forgotten people. May I present to you the story of Matthias Sindelar, the captain of the I keep saying Australian, but it's not. It's the Austrian football team. I love the Australian football team, but this is about the Austrian football team. The Wonder Team I mentioned in last fortnight's What the History. I came across Matthias while researching for the 1938 World Cup, and as we are still in the magical throes of the 2018 World Cup, it seems like the right time to do another football-related story. And what a story it is! Matthias was born on the 10th of February 1903 in the former Austro-Hungarian Empire town of Kozlov, Moravia, now part of the Czech Republic, to Jean and Marie Sindela. The family moved to Vienna when Matthias was 2 years old, settling in the industrial Favoriten district, a relatively poor area. In his teens, Matthias was spotted by talent scouts, playing with a ball made of rags, and by now had earned the nickname the Paper Man. Now, I'm saying that in English because I really can't pronounce the Austrian version, so, and I don't want to mess it up, okay? He was given the nickname Paper Man, given his slight frame and ability to move through defences when he played football in the streets of Favoriten. He soon joined the local Hertha club in 1918 at the age of 15 and moved on to Vienna Amateurs, later to be renamed FK Austria Vienna, and broke into the first team in 1924, despite an ongoing knee injury. It's said that his mode of playing football was done in such a way to protect his knee. It was less forceful and direct than his fellow players, with people calling him the Mozart of football and dubbing his playing style like a grandmaster playing chess. Journalists swooned round him with one noting, and I quote, Sindelar's shot at the back of the net, like the perfect punchline, the ending that made it possible to understand and appreciate the perfect composition of the story, the crowning of which it represented, end quote. Wow. It was with FK Austria Vienna that the team won several Austria Cups during the 20s and 30s. The 1920s and 30s, that is, guys. His field performances were discussed at great length in the Viennese coffee houses, where Matthias would drink and gamble with fans, and in the first three seasons, Matthias led his team to 3 Austrian Cups and a league title. In 1926, Matthias made his debut in the Austrian team and scored the winning goal in his first game against Czechoslovakia 2-1, then scoring twice in a 7-1 game against Switzerland. The man people much later dubbed the pre-war Pelé was well on the international stage and influential people were noticing. A team was being put together by English coach Jimmy Hogan and manager Hugo Meisel, with Matthias as its shining star. It was in May 1931, during a game in Vienna against a strong Scottish side, in which Scotland went home after being demolished 5-0, that the term Wonder Team was first created. With a mixture of passing and lethal finishing which became the team's trademark, Austria also dominated the football world stage for the next 3 years. The Wonder Team went on to crush Germany with 6-0, annihilated the Swiss team with 8-1, obliterated the Hungarian team with 8-2, and decimated the French team with 4-0. The Wonder Team played England at Stamford Bridge in December 1932, which was a big deal in Vienna, with fans packing the Heldenplatz to watch the game, with Austria narrowly losing to England 4-3. No mean feat, given that England was 2-0 at half-time. England was 2, Austria 0. Matthias led his team and scored a goal himself to show England they weren't going to get away so easily, and the media went wild for Matthias and his Wonder Team. The Daily Mail called Matthias a genius, the Times called him the greatest player in the world, and after the match against England, Belgian referee John Leganis said that Matthias's goal was, and I quote, a masterpiece that no one else could have scored against a team like England, end quote. Matthias was now a major celebrity in Vienna and turned to advertising watches and milk, and even appearing in a film named Roxy and Her Wonder Team. Other teams began calling for the star striker, offering huge sums of money to FK Austria to let him go, Manchester United included. Pretty big praise there. Matthias refused all of them, not wanting to leave his beloved mother, who was widowed in 1917, when her husband Jean was killed in the First World War, his Wonder Team, and his Austria. In 1933, the Wonder Team took out the Metropa Cup, beating Ambrosiana Milan
later to become Internacional, and followed up 3 years later, beating Slavia Prague. The World Cup began in 1930, and in 1934, the Wonder Team joined the teams in what was to go on to be the major event that we see today. Italy was the host country, and Austria was touted to go all the way to the finals. The Wonder Team beat old rivals Hungary and France, and were up against Italy for a semi-final berth. Sadly, the Wonder Team lost 1-0, with Matias being targeted by the Italians, with one kicking him when he was on the ground injured. The ground was a muddy quagmire from heavy rain and not suited to the Austrians' usual mode of play. Mussolini was delighted with the eventual winning of the cup by Italy, using the cup, unfortunately, to promote fascism. The Third World Cup was held in 1938 with France as the host country, with again the Wonder Team ready to play with the hope of this time taking home the cup. However, on the 12th of March, a few months before the cup began in June, the Nazis entered Austria and, led by Hitler, annexed Austria with Germany, also known as the Anschluss. Therefore, Austria ceased to exist as her own country, now being absorbed into Germany. The Wonder Team, despite qualifying, now ceased to exist, with some players going into the German team. Other team members, due to their Jewish ancestry, weren't allowed to play at all. Matthias, as a social democrat, detested Nazism and saw his beloved FK Austria's Jewish teammates and officials being replaced, with some being forced into exile. The club itself had Jewish connections, traditionally being the team of the middle-class Jewish population, and wasn't popular with new overlords, and the fact that the team had a slick, unforceful playing style, which was at odds with the more direct, not as slick, German playing style. As a result, FK Austria lost half of its team members, with most of its officials. To show no hard feelings, in air quotes there, between the Germans and the Austrians, the Nazis decided to stage what they called a reunification game, again in air quotes, between old Austria and the new Austro-German side, with Matthias captaining older Austria and the best non-Jewish, as Aryan as you can get, players on the other side. The game was set for April 1938, and it was here that Matthias told the Nazis in no uncertain terms how much he abhorred the Nazis annexing his country. Old Austria was told it better not try and score and just let the other team win, and for a time it looked like the game was going to go that way. The score was nil all, with conflicting stories saying that Matthias was off his game, literally, or literally really wanted to screw with the minds of the opposing team, when in the second half Matthias and his teammate Sester scored a goal each, effectively thumbing their noses and doing what they do best, much to the annoyance of the Nazi officials who expected old Austria to toe the party line. They were even more annoyed when old Austria won 2-0 and fuming by the time Matthias gave a little victory dance in front of their box. And there's actually footage of the faces of the Nazi officials with they're not looking happy. And it's great. The Nazis invited Matthias to Reich training sessions, in air quotes again, but Matthias gave his age and injury as refusal. No way was he going to go near the Nazis, especially to play his beloved game. Matthias retired and bought a coffee house from a Jewish man who, as a Jew, was no longer allowed to own a business, and paid him the full amount and settled down with his girlfriend, Camilla Casnagola, who just bought a bar. Matthias catered to Jews and non-Jews alike, and life seemed great. On the morning of January 23rd, 1939, at the age of 35, Matthias was found by his friend Gustav Hartmann, dead in his apartment above his coffee house, next to the unconscious body of Camilla, and was found to have died from carbon monoxide poisoning, with Camilla dying in hospital soon afterwards. The official mode of death was a faulty heater in the apartment, but rumours soon began to circulate that Matthias and Camilla's deaths was the result of murder by the Gestapo, or they passed in a suicide pact, with some sources writing that Matthias couldn't live while his country, his home and his sport were being taken over. The deaths were officially recorded as accidents, and Vienna's most famous football son received a state funeral. Matthias Sindelar, proud Austrian and brilliant footballer, pre-war Pelé, the Mozart of football, was laid to rest with 15,000 people in attendance, most convinced that he was murdered. I will leave it to you, wonderful listeners, to do your own research and discuss what you think. And if I had money, which I don't because I'm saving up for the UK, I would bet that football fans across the world know Matthias's name. And if they don't, well, they do now. R.I.P. Matthias Sindelar, you have earned a place in What the History forevermore.
Yeah, amazing person. And it's such a shame that his legacy really isn't that well known.
Exactly. He should be right up there with Maradona, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. Pelé, Maradona, Beckham.
Absolutely.
He bent it like Beckham.
Should be a whole thing dedicated to him at the start of every World Cup.
Yeah, I really admire this guy. Especially when he was doing, just saying, I am not going to play by your rules.
No to Nazis.
No to Nazis. No to Nazis. You know what we think about Nazis here at What the History.
If you listened all the way to the very, very end of last fortnight, you know exactly what we think.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's move on.
Moving right along.
Mine is completely different.
You can't even have a segue in this?
I can't even have a segue.
There is no segue.
There is no football.
First time for everything.
There is nothing to do. Well, yeah, there's a German in it.
I will go with that one then.
That's all I got.
Yeah.
Anyway.
You got nothing.
I will move on. This one has a bit of setup, so just...
Yeah, be with us.
I will get to the specific what the... in due course. Thought to have originated in Scotland as early as 1599, the Freemasons have proven to be a ripe source of rumours and conspiracy theories over the centuries. Throughout the years, there have been whispers about their links to the even more mysterious Illuminati, and how they secretly rule the world.
Yes.
As a side note, this is not a view shared by Robert Cooper, the curator of the Grand Lodge of Scotland and author of the book Cracking the Freemasons Code, who told BBC Travel in 2016, quote, "If we're a secret society... how do you know about us? This is a public building. We've got a website, a Facebook page, Twitter. We even advertise things in the press.
I love
but we're still a secret society running the world.
With the lizards.
A real secret society is the Mafia, the Chinese triads. They are real secret societies. They don't have a public library. They don't have a museum you can wander into." End quote. I had to include that quote. I thought it was great.
I love it.
Despite this conviction, mistrust in the Freemasons has long been a thing, even leading to Pope Clement XII forbidding Catholics joining the society in his Eminenti Apostolatos Specula, or papal bull, issued in April 1738, which started, and I have condensed this somewhat.
It's just in the original, went on forever.
Yeah. Quote, "We consider it our duty to watch day and night as a faithful servant of the household of the Lord, lest such men, Freemasons and other such groups, do not break into the house like thieves and like foxes seek to destroy the vineyard, thereby perverting the hearts of the simple and piercing them with their poisoned arrows." And a bit further down... "Wherefore we prohibit most strictly and in virtue of holy obedience each and all of the faithful of Jesus Christ of whatever state, degree, condition, rank, dignity and prominence, be they lay or clerical, secular or regular, even those who are entitled to special mention, to dare or presume under any pretext or reason to enter the aforesaid societies of the Freemasons or whatever name they are called."
Oh my gosh.
End quote for now. So what would happen to any of the faithful who dared to join the Freemasons? Well, let's head back to the papal bull and find out. Quote, "We categorically command that they completely stay clear of those societies, assemblies, meetings, gatherings, or groups under pain of incurring automatic excommunication for all transgressors without further declaration being required, and from which no one can obtain the benefit of absolution unless he be in danger of death by anyone except ourselves or the Roman pontiff of the time.
Ooh.
End quote. So join the Freemasons, instant excommunication. You can only come back on your deathbed or if the Pope decides that you could be forgiven. Oh, and this declaration was also made in perpetuity, so technically Roman Catholics still are forbidden from joining the Freemasons.
I don't know if I should be laughing at this one.
It's just really good into detail.
Oh, God. And sorry to all our Catholic listeners out there. I'm really sorry.
And that was the condensed version. So, what was a Roman Catholic of the late 1730s to do if they wanted to join a society now that becoming a Freemason would lead to instant excommunication? Enter Clemens August of Wittelsbach, Bavaria. I do apologise for anyone who is from Wittelsbach for my pronunciation.
I think that's actually pretty close.
Okay. Who, in 1740, commissioned German sculptor Johann Joachim Kandler to create a series of porcelain pug dogs. Pugs were not only considered to be steady, loyal, and trustworthy, but had also become a subversive symbol, representing enlightenment under the very Catholic rulers of Europe. It was this combination which led to Clemens creating the Mopsorden in 1740, or translated from his native German, the Order of the Pugs. What the? To become a member of this pug puppy secret society, you needed to be a Roman Catholic. It was also very progressive, as it allowed women to not only join, but also ensured that each lodge had two masters, a man and a woman.
Mm-hmm.
So what did becoming a member of the society involve? New members would need to wear a dog collar and seek entrance to the lodge by scratching at the door. They would then be blindfolded and led around a carpet decorated with ceremonial symbols 9 times, while the other members stood around, alternately barking at them and shouting, "Memento Mori!" which translates to, "Remember, you shall die."
Thank you.
The blindfolded initiate would finally be led to kiss the Grand Pug, being one of the porcelain pug statues, firmly on the bum, right under the tail, as a symbol of their total devotion to the order. The society did not officially last very long. In 1745, an exposé titled, forgive me in advance,
oh, good luck,
Lord de la Franc Macon's Trahi et le Secret des Mopses Relele, was published in Amsterdam. Members of the societies were put on trial, and the Order of the Pugs was officially outlawed in 1748. There are, however, reports from German authorities that it continued in secret as late as 1902.
Mm.
So by banning followers from joining a not-so-secret society, at least according to our friend Robert Cooper, Pope Clement XII caused an even more secret society to form around pugs. What the history?
I love pugs. They're so adorable.
Honestly, if I found out that there was a chapter of the Order of the Pugs nearby, I would totally check it out. But yeah, totally.
But you're not Roman Catholic.
Well, you know, I know enough about it. I'm sure I could.
Oh no.
Pretend.
Oh no, no. One cannot pretend to be Catholic.
Pugs.
Either you are or you're not.
I want to kiss the pug's bum.
You're either on the bus or you're off the bus, Trev.
I want to kiss the porcelain pug bum.
Well, fine. I will find you a porcelain pug and you can kiss its bum all you want.
But what about the whole thing, scratching at the door, being led around a ceremonial carpet?
I'm sure if you wanted to come home one night and scratch at the door, I will let you in. You can wear a dog collar if you want to. Okay, this is going a bit too far.
Yeah, okay, let's move on.
Hi!
So, with that little side note, in our already long episode.
Oh my god.
If you want to know more about what we've discussed, we have our references down in the podcast description, just down below. If you're watching this on YouTube, there will be a link to the podcast episode page where you can find all those links to find out more about the amazingly awesome Matthias and the amazingly awesome Order of the Pugs.
That's right.
Yes.
Matthias.
I've already apologized. Matthias. Oh, look, I'll keep apologizing for my pronunciation. Okay.
Keep going.
Bad pronunciation.
We do try.
We try very, very hard. And, of course, we would love to hear from you guys what you thought of the podcast, anything that you might know of that you think we could look into, anything extra that you found out about what we've discussed. We do look at the surface level stuff, really, on this podcast to keep it fun and quick and peppy. But, you know, we encourage everyone to go out there and find out more about these bits of what the history, because frankly, they don't get enough attention.
Yeah, the world is full of history, as they said in Bill and Ted's.
Is full of history.
Oh, no, salad dressing, dude. But yeah, you know, knowledge kept to oneself is not good.
No.
So free knowledge. Please go and experience it. Get out there. Immerse yourself in it.
And then tell us all about it.
Yeah, go
by
on.
Heading to our homepage, wthpod.roofersproject.com, where you can leave a comment below this very episode. You can find the What the History podcast Facebook page, and we're also on Twitter at pod_what, or use the hashtag WTHpod to track us down there, or you can even just send us an email to wthpod@roofersproject.com. We'd love to hear from you. And here's a little extra bit. I am hoping to get to the most Wuthering Heights day ever in Brisbane on July 14th. It's at Bedford Park, Spring Hill, if you can make it there. I would encourage anyone to come along and join in, make donations. All money raised goes to the charity DV Connect. So
yes.
Very serious moment here. If you can get involved or make a donation, find the Most Wuthering Heights Day Brisbane on Facebook for all the details.
Might even put a link to that on this as well.
Could do that as well.
Go on.
And I will say, if you want to come say hi to me, I'll be the bald guy in a red dress.
Yep.
Yeah. It's awesome, by the way.
It is. So good.
It is such a fun afternoon, and it's such a worthy cause. So if you can come along, if you have listened to this, and you manage to track me down in the sea of red dresses, say hi.
Say hi to your wonderful What the Historian. Yeah.
And I think on that note, we should probably wrap this episode up.
I unfortunately cannot go to Wuthering Heights. I usually go.
So we will be back, though, in a couple of weeks' time in your podcast receiving ears.
What?
It worked.
What? What?
With two more bizarre bits of history to make you say,
What the history? Good night, everyone.
Farewell.